You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken Nikusic, back from vacation here and ready to record some more episodes. I am still looking to record some shorts this month. If you're interested, please hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Today, we've got a good one for you. We're going to talk about the Ravens' late round wide receiver drafts and how they have done. Joining me to do that is Ben Mihal. Ben, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks so much for having me on today, Ken.
All right. Well, Ben, rather than have me introduce this topic directly, I'm going to let you start it off here. Talk about, you know, kind of what hypothesis you had or when you originally suggested the episode and how that might have changed.
Yeah. So the kind of the genesis of this idea was based on the 23 and 24 drafts initially, or really the 22 and 23 drafts, excuse me. And basically, you know, the Ravens receiver room was in a pretty rough place those years. And I was wondering why they didn't take more late round shots, as it seems like some other teams did. Now, the real genesis for this was looking at players like, you know, Puka Nacua is obviously an insane outlier, but the 23 draft had a lot of guys kind of late in the draft, rounds 5 and beyond I'm talking about here. Talking like Dontavian Wicks, Andre Yosivas, who ended up having roles on their teams pretty quickly. And I was just like, man, it seems like the Ravens never kind of go this route. Now I'm going to kind of jump ahead a little bit and say that I after digging past those two drafts, I kind of realized the Ravens have been a little better in this area than I initially predicted. And obviously the draft is a crapshoot. We can get into that. But the Ravens have taken some late round flyers on guys. Now, whether they're the right guys or not, that's another topic, but regardless, I can't be mad at them for take shots. And that's kind of the whole point of the draft. So that's kind of high level where I was starting with this.
All right. Well, great. Let's start wherever you'd like in terms of talking about a specific round or whatever you'd like to do first.
Definitely. And I think a great starting point is understanding that currently, despite all of this, the Ravens have the best wide receiver room they've ever had, on paper at least, coming into the 25 season. They have a great blend of young stars with Bateman and Flowers, obviously, some good veteran talent. They've got a ascending player like Tez Walker, good role players, Tylan Wallace, kind of different size and skill sets, which is kind of everything you would want from a receiver room. But, you know, I think we have to take a step back and understand that Lamar Jackson wasn't always this finished product that we see him as now. And I kind of have been trying to make the argument maybe 3 years ago, something like that, that like, you know, giving him a little more receiver talent to work with would have maybe accelerated that a little more. You can talk about the Monken influence and things and where that, how that came from. And then just talking about the draft as a whole, context matters a lot. Some teams are more set up than others to develop wide receivers, both early and late. The Ravens have definitely not been always the best place for a receiver to develop. I think we're kind of turning that corner now, as we can get into. And when we're looking at drafts in hindsight, you know, there's a lot of kind of context for players falling or players being available in late rounds that we don't always have. So like interviews, medicals, team fit, you know, regime change with different teams, things like that. So yeah, so I think, like I said, the genesis of this kind of came from the 22 and 23 drafts. And I was really kind of fixating on some kind of sliding doors, like what if moments. And I also think it's important to mention that the Ravens have this great roster because they take late round or hit on late round players in a variety of positions. So, you know, there's going to be some times where we're saying, you know, one of these things can't exist without the other. But I like just taking a little snapshot here of seeing kind of some turning points. When we look at the 22 draft, you know, that was coming off of probably one of their worst wide receiver seasons they had had. The 21 and 22 season, the receiver situation was not great. And so I was looking at, you know, starting in round four, we have Romeo Doubs, Khalil Shakir, both taken only a handful of picks after Jordan Stout. I think you could very easily make the argument that Jordan Stout is a totally fine punter, but you could probably get that exact same value with a sixth, seventh round punter, an undrafted punter, veteran, you know, league average punter, things like that. So I'll let you get in there, Ken. Yeah.
I'll just say it's tough to look at the 22 draft and find a lot of fault with it. If you want to, first of all, I believe in looking to the value when you talk about missing out on players. You know, they got Hamilton and Linderbaum in round one. That was fine. Obviously, Hamilton, a fine player. Linderbaum, there are some reasons why he was not an ideal first round pick, primarily because of the position that he plays. Yep. Not just positional value, but the fact that you don't have any of the market frictions available to you. You don't have the fifth-year option of the franchise tag because of the way offensive linemen are priced. Then, you know, a more serious concern came in round two when they took David Ajabo. It was a risk. I guess they knew it was a risk coming right in. They didn't redshirt him for his entire first year in 22. He got some snaps in at the end of the year, despite having had the Achilles problem that occurred, I think, at the combine or pro day. I forget which one it was.
Pro day, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. But whatever the case, I mean, Ajabo was a player who ended up not being a good pick. And I think the likelihood is he will not be with the Ravens this year. It may be different, but then they got Travis Jones in the third round. They got Daniel Faalele in the fourth round. Whatever you think about Daniel Faalele right now, by the way, Daniel Faalele is still a good fourth round pick for where he is right now as an offensive lineman.
You've got a lot of great stuff in there, and I agree completely. So I'm just going to go one at a time to respond, because I think you made a lot of great points, and this is kind of exactly where I'm coming from with this. So round two, everybody's going to talk about Pickens, Ojabo, kind of crossroads there. First of all, I don't think the Ravens would have ever taken Pickens, and I think he's proven to be the kind of player that the Ravens wouldn't really want in their room. That being said, you have a cluster of other receivers right there in the second round. You've got like an Alex Pierce, who is a fine role player and a type of player the Ravens have never really had, a big vertical kind of downfield threat. Sky Moore, the Chiefs go with, and you kind of feel like, oh, this is a classic Chiefs pick. He hasn't really worked out. Trey McBride right there, also at tight end. And, you know, this is where you could really start to get weird with the scenario and say, oh, they go Trey McBride instead of David Ojabo potentially, and you know, maybe that opens up some different receiver options late instead of the Kolar Likely. Of course, Likely is one of my favorite players, and I have a lot of faith in Kolar. Going back to Ojabo, though, like I really liked the Ojabo pick in the moment, despite the baked-in risk. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked out that way. But so this is kind of where I'm coming from here. And I can list you off some other, you know, Jalen Naylor, Bo Melton, Rashida Shaheed, all sixth, seventh and undrafted receivers that, you know, maybe they could go those directions instead of the Beatty pick. I think draft to draft, you could make a big argument that a sixth rounder, seventh rounder, they're all kind of in the same cluster. That's where the value in different boards kind of, you know, go out the window.
Right. That these they get picked for need, they get picked for system fit, they get picked for other things. I agree with that.
Exactly.
And the Ravens have done some things in those rounds in the last few drafts I'm not really crazy about by any stretch. I thought the 2024 draft in particular was particularly weak from round five on. They got Rasheen Ali in round five, Devin Leary, et cetera. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to go back one more draft to 23 and talk late round two, because the 23 draft was very unique for the Ravens because, first of all, they finally hit on their first round receiver. Not finally. I'm a Bateman guy, too. So you could still argue that Bateman in the first round was a hit. I think we really saw last year how what his ceiling could be. But Flowers in 23 was a great pick right in the cluster of four straight wide receivers. Smith and Jigma, it seems like he's going to be a really good player. Quentin Johnson, not so much. Jordan Addison seems like he's an ascending player too. But the great irony of the 23 draft is that the best receiver in the draft was the last pick of round five in Puka Nacua. And I mean, I say that being a Zay Flowers fan, but Nacua, you know, sets the rookie receiving record and is widely considered to be a top five, top 10 receiver already. So if you look at the late round picks in the 23 draft for the Ravens, that's where I started to take some issue. And that was really the beginning of this, where they go Kai Blue Kelly, you know, middle of round five, they go Sala round six. Both of these guys are, you know, borderline out of the league already. And then Voorhees, the end of round seven, they trade back in, and that seems like that might be a nice pick. But, you know, you've got a cluster of guys that are contributing to NFL rosters on good teams with Nacua, obviously, but then you got Yoshivash, who is really the guy that I thought the Ravens could have targeted. He goes seven picks after Sala, and he's just one of these guys who's big, fast, strong, somebody that you really rarely see the Ravens go after. And then you've got guys like Tayshaun Booty, Trey Palmer, Parker Washington, who, you know, we'll see, obviously. It's not like we can really make a, we can grade their careers just yet. But again, it just felt to me like, man, you never see the Ravens taking a flyer on one of these guys.
All right. They have done it in the past.
And
we talk about some of those, certainly. But tie this together for me in terms of a hypothesis. I mean, you've listed a lot of individual players. Okay, there's players who get missed in every draft. So what?
Right.
They fall too far. And if you knew, you know, if everybody missed on Tom Brady multiple times, including the Patriots.
100%. And so they go back-to-back drafts right after these two that I'm talking about and kind of do exactly what I'm pleading for, where they go Tez Walker round four in the 24 draft, which I think is probably, you know, exactly what I'm asking for here essentially. And then this past season going LaJonte Wester in the sixth round, where, you know, his college teammate Horn was on the board too. I think he might have a little more upside receiver, but Wester seems to give you that, you know, kick return, punt return juice that we kind of need right now too. So I absolutely love those picks. So, right, that's kind of the beginning of my saying maybe I was wrong about this after all. Now you go back a little bit and let's talk kind of, you know, 2018 to 2021 range, and they actually did double dip at receiver all four of those years, and they did take late round shots on receivers, or, you know, Boykin was a third rounder. But in 2020, they go Prochet under round six. He's a prolific college player who ended up getting way more playing time than I would have preferred to see him get. And then we can talk 21. They go Bateman in round one and then Tylan Wallace in round four. And Wallace has been an NFL survivor and an awesome player and like part of this well-rounded room that I'm really liking seeing now.
He's a lot of value currently, but Devin Duvernay in the 20 draft as well, which I didn't hear his name mentioned.
Correct. Yeah. They go Duvernay and Prochet in 2020. Exactly.
Yeah. And 19, it was Boykin and Marquise Brown, of course. Marquise Brown, they got value back from him.
Yep.
I think if you include the trade value they got from Brown, and it's really two transactions, but if you include the trade value, I think that pick ended up having good value for the Ravens. But I don't know that I can include the trade value in the same way, because it's kind of like saying you did okay on the player when you really didn't do that great on the player, and you did very well on the trade when presumably if you could have drafted somebody else, you might have been more happy with the result there. I don't think it was a terrible pick by any means, but you know, a receiver who's not content with a situation that exists there as it was when he arrived is not a good thing.
And again, this is a fascinating moment because, yes, I actually agree. I thought Hollywood was a fine pick. I really thought there was some untapped value in the fact that he and Lamar seemed to be very, very close, worked out together, all of those things. But if you look at that draft, again, you've got Deebo Samuel, A.J. Brown, and D.K. Metcalf, a good 20 to 30 picks after Hollywood Brown, all of whom have had superior careers. But again, context, you know, how would A.J. Brown have looked in the 2019 Ravens offense? We'll never know, of course, but he did burst into the scene in a huge way. And I also was folding into this the 2018 draft where, you know, they kind of missed horribly on Lasley.
Jordan Lasley.
Yeah, Scott and Lasley. But again, you can't really take too much fault with that draft because the Ravens go Deshaun Elliott, Bozeman, Sealer, all in late rounds, who are all pretty awesome picks for sixth round and beyond.
Yep. There's a three of the best picks for those rounds ever for the Ravens. They have had better sixes because they had Adelis Thomas in the sixth round, but Deshaun Elliott and Bradley Bozeman are terrific sixth round picks. And Zach Sealer is probably the best pick the team has ever made in round seven.
Of course, they don't see the benefit of that.
They don't
right?
see the value. Yeah, right, they don't right. see the value. But it could.
Going back a little bit before, so I initially had intended on looking at this just in kind of the Lamar era and trying to ascertain kind of, you know, could we have armed him better? You know, you can't, I agree completely. I don't want to microanalyze every single pick because that's not the way it works, obviously. And, you know, we could also have, we skipped over this, but we could have talked 2020 draft where they go Patrick Queen at 128 overall. You really wanted McKinney, if I remember correctly.
That's correct.
They also missed out on T. Higgins and Michael Pittman Jr., three picks after Queen, both of who are those big X receivers that the Ravens have never really had. And I mean, I think that would be a fascinating thing to see how like a Lamar T. Higgins combo could have gone. But again, that draft was totally a fine draft. You know, the Dobbins injury clouds things a little bit, but I loved that pick as well. So anyway, going back a few years before this, it turns out, a lot of these get memory hauled, but the Ravens were doing this. They weren't taking early receivers in a lot of the kind of 2010 to 2020 range drafts, but they did take their shots. You know, you have the Perriman pick in 2015, and they grabbed Darren Waller in the sixth round too. You know, was still a wide receiver technically at that time. And, you know, that's a whole another podcast there in itself. But, you know, talking Michael Campanero in 2014, and then, you know, things get pretty weird with some guys that I'm a lifelong Ravens fan, and I don't even recognize some of these names that they went, you know, Tommy Streeter, Aaron Millett.
Yeah, let me cross-sectionalize that a different way. Because you're doing it by year, and it's actually, I think, very difficult to follow that way, frankly. But the seventh round, the receivers the Ravens ever had are Justin Harper, Michael Campanero, Aaron Millett, and Derek Abbey. And Michael Campanero, for quite some time, was threatening to be the best ever Ravens seventh round pick. It was out of him and the guy they had in the 2012 draft who played defensive line, whose name I've forgotten. But they've never had success. They've basically not had success with any seventh round picks. In the sixth round, Rowe in 1998, Streeter, 1996, Streeter in 2012, Clarence Moore, who was that was really a bad pick, even though he had two touchdowns in the No, That's Ed Reed game, the 2004 win at the Meadowlands. And then Prochet, can't say anything positive about that pick at this point. Darren Waller, you mentioned, Javon Hunter, who was around, he was in the 2002 draft, but he didn't last long. And LaJonte Wester, who, to me, right now, looks like he could very easily be the best six-round wide receiver the Ravens ever drafted.
You ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything, from stress to sleepless nights, with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com. Find your perfect gummy and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own. Surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Definitely, definitely. No, I agree. And that was kind of my facepalm moment in all of this research, because I had done a lot of this initial kind of theorizing before this year's draft. And then again, it's like, you can't be mad at that. And your point of, you know, some missed seventh round picks, well, I mean, most teams miss on their seventh round picks, you know.
Right.
The initial frustration was seeing things like, we talked about Caillou Kelly and Salah. I mean, I didn't get into Devin Leary, which is a pick that I'll absolutely never understand. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a wide receiver necessarily, but why not take a shot at a contributor? I think, you know, I'll never understand when you have Lamar Jackson taking a fifth or sixth round quarterback, especially now the team turns around and signs a pretty good backup in Cooper Rush. So, again, that not trying to go too far down that rabbit hole, but yes, I agree that Wester has the potential to be one of these guys that could be a nice piece, and is exactly what I'm looking for. That part of the beauty of the current receiver situation is they have Tez Walker and LaDonte Wester in, like, we're not needing anything from them this year, as of this moment at least, but they can kind of be in the room, develop, get that chemistry with Lamar established, etc.
Okay, well, here's the question that I would pose coming out of this, because obviously you can talk hits and misses all day long, and it really needs a system to be scored to, sure, to really look at this thing. But are the Ravens functionally, and perhaps because of the Roman offense in those years, are they particularly ill-suited to develop wide receiving talent? And were they for a period of time hamstrung in that regard by total number of wide receiver snaps, by how they wanted to utilize wide receivers, whether they wanted good blockers in the run game or whatever it might be, whether they wanted an additional tight end on the field for a lot of plays, whether they never have had good wide receiver coaching, because they can actually address that with just money.
Right.
But what's the root cause of this problem that the Ravens are not being able to develop any late round wide receivers, or many late round wide receivers, put it that way?
I think it's two tiered. I think you talk Flacco era and you talk Lamar era. So Flacco era, you do have a big armed quarterback who can hit outside the numbers, downfield, et cetera. And they just didn't take very many swings. And the swings they did take were kind of misses. So I think that's one. And that could be receiver coaching as well. That could have been team philosophy. The game has changed in this time too, which is something I'd meant to get in there earlier. I mean, you know, pre-2010, didn't even see that many three receiver sets across the league. And then, you know, that started to change, but the Ravens were not really on the cutting edge of that ever. Part two, the Greg Roman offense. And, you know, we can talk about this. We'll probably talk about this as Ravens fans forever, of chicken and the egg. Was Lamar successful because he was in the Roman offense, or was the Roman offense ultimately something that kind of gave them that jump start, but he was always going to be Lamar? We don't know, because they didn't really let him play that way. And you get the monk in offense starting in 23, and he, you know, he's clearly shown he can go downfield outside the numbers, complete quarterback game. So all of that to say, I do think philosophy-wise, the Ravens really hurt themselves in this area from the 2018 to, let's call it, 21-22 area. And your point is 100% correct. You know, you're looking at, what, 2.2 receivers in the field on average? And it doesn't give you a lot of time, a lot of ability to kind of develop these guys.
You're talking about the number of snaps per play you're getting.
Sure, exactly, yeah. Players.
So, it would have been a low number, but the other thing I have is it's a low number of draft picks. So in those five picks, and you're really limiting it to rounds 5 and 6 and 7, or maybe 4 to 7, whatever you want to call it, day 3 picks. It's not a lot of total picks over a 4 or 5 year period there. And you're only going to allocate a handful of those to wide receiver, maybe 4 at the most over a 5 year period that you're going to go for a wide receiver in rounds 4 through 7.
Right.
Fair enough.
No, definitely. And the whole thing that DaCosta always says is you want as many bites of the apple as you can, talking holistically about the draft, but it didn't always seem like that same philosophy was being applied to the wide receiver room in a more micro sense, I guess, is kind of what I'm coming out of here with.
Okay. All right. Well, I do think they've taken some chances. If you go back by round, let's go look a little further here. Jermaine Lewis, the best fifth round pick they ever had, very first draft of Ravens history, but they otherwise got David Reed, Jordan Lasley, and that's it. Only 3 fifth round wide receivers have been taken. You could point to that and say, hey, wide receivers could be as much as 3 out of 22. I should see maybe 14% of my draft picks coming from wide receiver. And that has not happened so far by, I guess they're not one short because they've had more than 32 fifth round or 30 fifth round picks, I should say, because of all the comp picks the team has had, they probably are about 2 wide receivers short in that fifth round. So I think if you're going to talk that might be a place, but if you include the fifth and sixth round, they got a lot of sixth round wide receivers they drafted.
They have. And I think my memory of this gets distorted sometimes because of people like Prochet, where like, they took the shot, right? What am I asking them to do? Take shots in the sixth round. Here's Prochet. He has a prolific collegiate career. But now you're talking 21, 22 seasons, and Ravens fans are going crazy. Get Prochet on the field, right? Like, before we saw him, it's like, hey, we could use some juice. Like, here's this guy that can contribute. But, you know, now fast forward a few years later, he's almost out of the league already. He never really was able to do very much. I mean, the last memory I had of him on an NFL field is muffing the punt on the Browns against the Ravens. Right. I think 2 years ago. So I mean, right. And I think there's a lot of arguments to be made in a lot of directions here. But for me, I wanted to kind of treat this more as like just an interesting like kind of research project because the fact of the matter is the Ravens have taken early round receivers in the last, you know, in modern era. You're talking Hollywood, Bateman, Zay. I thought this year was very fascinating where they really could have continued to really invest and maybe gone something like a Luther Burden in round 1 this year and really, really juiced that position. But again, looking at things in this exact moment, you know, we're here almost July 25 and, you know, the Ravens receiver room is in a fantastic place. And all I can ask going forward is that they can continue to invest one way or another in the future of that position.
I'm going to challenge you in another way on the argument in general that,
yeah.
What would turn this team around is more fifth round wide receivers. I mean, the Ravens have been the best franchise in the league talent wise the last 2 years. It's not been close. If you look at anything like DVOA or other advanced metrics, if you look point differential, other things like that, they're the best team in the league as the starting point. Obviously, they did a lot of things right to get there, including managing the draft well. So it's hard to really point to a lack of fifth round wide receivers as some differentiating factor that would have propelled the Ravens to the Super Bowl in either of the last 2 years. The Ravens didn't win the Super Bowl either of the last 2 years because of their own mistakes. They couldn't get out of their own way in the playoffs. They had 3 turnovers at Buffalo, and they had the problems in the game against Kansas City as well, in terms of including the fumble at the goal line and
3 turnovers in that game also. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I don't think there's a fifth round wide receiver. Boy, if we had him, everything would be different right now. And the Ravens would have 2 more trophies in there, and Lamar would have 2 rings, and you know, it would all be peaches and cream right now. I just I I don't see it that way. They did have the best roster. I think the front office did absolutely everything they could to put together a great roster that did not sacrifice the future in each of these last 2 years.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. And you're exactly right. The one thing I didn't say is, taking a step back, the Ravens absolutely have the best roster in the league two, three straight years. However they got there, right? DaCosta is a great drafting GM and a great GM, period. And right, this is where I ended up, is that absolutely, you're 100% right. Like, no, the Ravens did not ultimately sacrifice anything for their current build by taking these shots. And the thing that makes the Ravens the Ravens and DaCosta is that he's going to take these late round shots all over the place. And he's going to hit on guys like, you know, Tavius Robinson in the fourth round, or, you know, we could go on and on. And yes, for every Caillou Kelly or Devin Leary, there's also guys that they've hit on year after year. And so all of that to say, right, I mean, I came in with kind of my mind focused on this one thing, but now taking a step back, like, you know, you really can't quibble with the way that they've, like, gone about things. And I think I'm super happy, obviously, with where the Ravens roster is right now. And short of drafting Puka Nacua, who probably wouldn't have been Puka Nacua on the Ravens anyway, you can't take issue with too many of their decisions.
Okay, well, I'm in agreement that the roster for the current Ravens roster is outstanding, and it's it certainly has gotten here by hook or crook to this point, where it's hard to find a true flaw with the way things were done. And the one thing I would say, I guess, is that they, trying to go to a deeper set of wide receivers is a double-edged sword, that, you know, if you expend picks, then you kind of expend the developmental requirements on that player, meaning you can't get rid of him right away easily. And they did with Scott and Lasley. They got rid of those two guys pretty easily because, frankly, those guys made it easy for them to get rid of them. Jaleel Scott played like crap in the preseason the first year. He hung around at camp in the second year and then was gone pretty quickly. And Lasley threw the ball into the pond. And that was the end of his time in Baltimore effectively. Right. So you're beholden to that pick once you make it. And sometimes the pick takes a while to pay off. Tylan Wallace took a while to pay off, but he's paid off very well in terms of what he's done for the Ravens. DeVontae Walker played 11 straight games or 11 out of 12 to end the season, where he played well on special teams. And we finally saw, you know, one catch out of him for a touchdown. it was a nice catch, but it was also a design play to get him open. It
right,
was a
specific, right, absolutely.
You know, thing. It's not he didn't build extended play chemistry with Lamar or anything like that, we have a specific reason to believe he's going to be additionally successful. I think he has a host of challenges actually going forward, with one gigantic one being needs to have a complementary route to run with his verticals. He needs to have some sort of comeback route that he can sell to a cornerback when he wants to go vertical. And because he's a bigger receiver, he has some problems with that in terms of the salesmanship he has available to himself, as opposed to his Zay Flowers. The topic for another show. But anyway, really like Lejonte Wester, because he's more like Flowers in his ability to cut without sinking his hips terribly much and giving away too much to that defender. It's an interesting discussion, because the Ravens, they haven't really been consistent in over their whole history in terms of how they've approached it. But they've had, you know, some success in terms of what they've done with receivers.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing we didn't talk about that you started to hit on there, which with special teams, is there's so much that goes into the wide receiver position, especially if you're not one of the starting, quote unquote, two or three receivers that you have to do to stay on an NFL roster. And that's what makes Tylan Wallace such a great success story, because he does everything you would possibly want from a receiver that isn't going to be your top two or three. The one thing also that about the current Ravens build, or looking to last season, is that you did see that depth strained just a little bit on the final drives against Buffalo. That wasn't the thing that limited them in that game, of course, but you're looking at Anthony Miller and Tylan Wallace and Nelson Aguilar as your kind of trio out there on the, you know, the one drive where you have to have it. Now they had it, so you can't, they got it. So again, all of that to say, Lamar Jackson is just an incredible player, and the tight end situation, you know, obviously we haven't really touched on, but the Ravens, you know, the Ravens would like to get two tight ends out there the entire Lamar era. And they've done a great job with that. And I was actually looking at 2018, 2019 Ravens, and they had four good tight ends on those teams that they were just rotating all the time. And they've kind of continued that build through the 2020s. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of different ways to approach this. I think there's a lot that we'll never know about the decision-making process. And I think ultimately things are trending in the direction that I was hoping for, which is just kind of keep taking those late round shots and making sure your back end of that room has some investment in it and has the ability to build, you know, with a quarterback like Lamar.
All right, let's finish it with this here. How would you grade the DaCosta era draft of wide receivers? Scale of 1 to 10, A to F, whatever you want to do.
I think it's been, I would say it's been a solid B, honestly. It's hard to separate eras out because, you know, you have kind of the few what I would call almost dead years in the, you know, 2015 to 2019 range. I think the Ravens have mitigated their drafting approach with a crazy amount of veteran receivers, which again is a topic for another show, just the sheer amount of like late in their career veterans they went with. But I think, you know, starting with the Hollywood pick in 2019, they've clearly put a nice investment into this. And I consider the Bateman and Flowers picks to be, I would call them A's, honestly, maybe not A+, obviously, but all of that to kind of build this nice diverse room that they have now, which is kind of where I started with this. So I'm curious what you're thinking here.
Yeah, I think that's about right. Obviously, maybe they didn't do as well as we'd hope in 20, but it's easy to pick a year in which at a position that a team really didn't draft well. They took two receivers in 20, and I wouldn't say they got a lot of value out of Devin Duvernay or Prochet. You know, Devin Duvernay, the third round pick, is it unreasonable that, a two-time Pro Bowler or whatever he was is not really a great value pick? He was probably okay, you know, for a third round pick. Right. Not great, not terrible. But obviously Prochet is not a lot of value to get, for any pick really.
You look at 2020 and 2021 drafts and the second rounds are just littered with guys that you've either never heard of or out of the league already. And the teams that did make those investments were probably proved wrong. And hindsight's always 2020, but that's really why I liked this topic, because it's so fascinating to look at these drafts 2 years out, 5 years out, things like that.
Really good point. I mean, a lot of people wanted Denzel Mims instead of Jake
Exactly.
Dodd.
Exactly.
That's a perfect example of one. Van Jefferson, he's been a little bit better than that in his career, but still a guy who, I don't know. Yeah, I guess I'd want him over Dobbins, given what Dobbins' injury history has been, but it's not a really exciting pick either, honestly.
Correct. Yeah.
It's great talking about this with you. Certainly some seed for some discussion. If you're listening to this and you'd like to talk about what's the real problem that you see with the Ravens drafting or development of wide receivers, comment on this when it's posted. And we'd love to hear from you. I'm sure Ben and I will both have some things to say. Ben, we appreciate you coming on. Where can you people talk football with you?
Yeah, I'm still hanging on to Twitter, looking to talk football and not much else there at Classic Mihal, Classic MIHAL. Looking forward to doing a few more pods with you, Ken, and just talking Ravens in general.
All right. Ben hit me up with a couple great ideas for pods, and we're going to talk about those over the next few days. Have some other good ones that have come in. But I have time right now. Before camp starts, I have time to record some more and have them actually trickle in camp off days and whatnot that'll be coming in late July and early August. So I still got a little time. Hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Ben, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.